When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It would be a waltz, but eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Flaps in the shot. What a goal!
This is an advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online. We all carry different stresses, big and small. It could be from work, stuff going on at home, or just from supporting a football team. You're flattered to deceive, and as the bed sheets have always said, let us down. We often bottle up these stresses and try and keep a lid on them, but when you do that, it can start to affect you negatively. That's where therapy comes in. It gives you a place to get these things off your chest, get down to root cause, and figure out how to work through what's weighing you down. Therapy is there to help develop positive coping skills. It's not just for people who have experienced major trauma. It's about empowering you to be the best version of yourself. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, why not look and give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible and suited to your schedule. With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Our listeners can get 10% off their first month using the code betterhelp.com/wanderers. That's betterhelp.com/wanderers. Let's get back to the show.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Wolves Fancast. It's Rich Hobbs here, and joining me by the campfire tonight, we've got Stu and Andy. Stu, you're the one who messaged me using the phrase earlier, and you know what? I'm going to run with it.
I didn't say campfire. I said fireside chats when there's two people together. Not three.
Sorry, hang on. Whoa, hang on. But is that not effectively the same thing? If we're having a fireside chat, we're going to be by a campfire?
It was an old thing they used to say on IGN years ago when there was only two of them. They used to say it was a fireside chat because it's like you'd have two people in a house before telly was invented, where you'd have nothing else to do but talk to each other. So henceforth, a fireside chat. I know in technicality, it makes no sense at all, but two people's a fireside chat, not three. I don't know what three is in this kind of oldie worldy scenario, but there we are.
I still think we can make this a fireside chat. Personally, between the three of us, we'll have a nice chat about Wolves and just nothing else.
Yeah, no rubbing sticks together either.
No. Anyway, I'm joined by Stu and Andy, of course, for those merry listeners who cannot see us over on YouTube. Big thanks to everyone, of course, who is watching live and in the comments, and anyone who's watching back on there as well. Yes, we're going to be talking about Wolves' defeat to Brentford, because I think, as Stu said in tweets and offline, it's been four games in about 6 weeks, and effectively they seem to have worked us out by the end of it over the series of games. But there's a lot to kind of digest, some players we want to sort of chat about, and some key moments in the game, of course. Let's go starting lineup, because realistically he probably didn't need to change it from the Chelsea match, but I guess the most notable exclusion was Hwang, who pulled up with a slight injury in the last couple of days after returning from international duty.
Yeah, I think barring Hwang's injury, that's as good as it's going to get, isn't it, really, that lineup, to be honest. So I think it was pretty much as expected going into yesterday's game. No real surprises there. It's nice to see Boubacar back on the bench. At least that's a little bit stronger than having Harvey Griffiths on there with 0 minutes in the Premier League. But yeah, it's much of a muchness, wasn't it?
I think after that Chelsea performance as well, and I know you said you've been a bastion of the old ways, Andy, where you said a few weeks ago that you don't change your winning side. I don't think that's really that productive when we... I mean, if we had changed it yesterday, we wouldn't have been as predictable. And maybe that would have actually worked in our favour, because I know we'll get onto it, but Thomas Wank looked like he had our number yesterday. We played exactly the same way as we did in the other three games against them. And I think them coming straight out of the blocks kind of did us in. And you thought, oh, fucking hell, it's going to be one of these days, eh? But looking at that starting lineup, we didn't expect anything, any of that. So you can only have a go with hindsight when it made perfect sense to keep the team because of how well we performed at Chelsea.
No, and like realistically, what changes would you have made? Like that would have massively impacted the result. No, the difference between Lamina, Gomez, and Doyle's not a huge amount. You know, I think it's very much a in hindsight one in terms of maybe you play Bueno instead of Dawson, but and Traore's just come back off international duty. Everyone else is very much a rung down the ladder for me in terms of, you know, playing Doherty, Hugo Bueno, Bellegarde we'll talk about because I think he's sort of starting to divide a few fans. And then you've got the two young lads. So it when it comes down to it, I think, and particularly because you said, like, we've played them a lot recently as well, and they seem to have mapped out a game plan for how to beat us great, far more effective than they have done the last few games. It just felt like it just got that bit too repetitive, whether it was formation or players, to be honest with us.
I mean, potentially Doyle, because Doyle, like the last couple of times we've played against him, Doyle has been the man of the match. So I could maybe see going back to Doyle, but Joe Gomez played such a blinder against Chelsea, it would have been really harsh to drop him. But then it's harsh to drop Doyle in the first place, so... Yeah, you just toss a coin, don't you? And whichever one it lands on, I think, is whatever you pick that particular week.
Yeah, pretty much. But Stu, you're right. We didn't, I say, it's not necessarily we didn't come out starting well, but Brentford really came out gunning for us in that first half, didn't they?
Yeah, and you can see it was different to every other time we've played them, where they looked like they had an idea of, oh, let's attack them for a change. And let's not just sit back and be arseholes all game. Let's actually try first and see if we can get something. And we kind of look rattled. And it's weird to see that. I mean, I know it happened against Man United in the first half as well, but that's Man United, not Brentford, even though they are what they are. But it looked like we didn't have a clue. Like, it was completely unexpected. And you'd think, well, surely after three games, they're going to do something different. And Dean's put it, I know Dean Marsden put in the comments there what's Stu's thoughts on playing out from the back. I'll come to that later. But oh, fuck you, whatever. We'll talk about it now. I mean, they did us, their goals came from us pissing about. And I know Gully can say all he wants on Twitter, say, oh, it's not really technically playing out from the back because you're passing around in your own third of the defensive third of the pitch, and you lose possession, what's going to happen? If you lose possession on the halfway line, it's not as bad. If you lose possession further up, it's not as bad. If you lose it there, then it's playing out from the back. And the writing was on the wall. We've seen this before. With Sarr can't do it, so I don't know why they're trying it again. Like, we had it, I can't remember what the game, you might remember, Andy, where we tried it for about 20 minutes, and people started getting on his back, and they scrapped it after 20 minutes. And then we created a chance straight away from a proper ball down the field. And it's like, well, why are we doing? We're going back to this again. So for whatever he is, and obviously I've made my feelings about him, he's the best keeper we've got this season. There's no point talking about that. He's just the best we've got. He's not going to be dropped for Bentley. So you maximise what you've got. Getting into play balls into the midfield is not a good idea. Getting Dawson this time, and Kilman had been guilty of this as well in the last few weeks, of passing through the thirds and to players under pressure, it's risky, but it doesn't come to anything. And I know the thinking behind it, it creates chances and you you set traps and you hit on there. But how many goals have we actually scored off playing like this? And I know it's not all about goals and it's about managing the possession and things like that and spaces, but it's not worth the hassle. Look at the amount of goals that Brighton have conceded this season with this kind of pissing about stuff. You see it every single week. If you're not Man City, I mean, even Liverpool have got done. I don't know why Alisson wasn't playing yesterday, if he was rested or if there was something else wrong with him. But Alisson has been awful for the last 2 months of getting caught in possession over and over again. It's the most stupid thing in the entire world of football. Why everyone has to copy Man City when they haven't got the players to do it is beyond me. I have no idea why. And we got done for the second goal that we'll come to later, but the writing was on the wall as soon as Sarr started doing it again, because he can't play that way.
Yeah, I sort of agree to quite a big extent, to be honest, Stu, because you are right. There is a difference between playing from the back and trying to play it out from the back. We were trying to invite them on and then play pretty triangles around them to work our way up. But we were getting like 10 yards at best before fucking it up time and again. It wasn't a case of keeping possession like 40 yards out, playing it around and looking to, you know, probe passes here, there and everywhere. It just didn't work. And there was a real issue with the fact that Brentford kept all of their players at all times behind the ball when we had it. There was no point in the game when Brentford tried to have a man ahead of where the ball was and we had it, so they could hit us long. All they needed to do was just wait for us to fuck up and then spring it. And that's all they had to do time and again. So we were just constantly coming up against what I say two banks of four. It wasn't, because it was the strikers as well. It was 10 players behind the ball, completely restricting our movement. We wouldn't ever look to go long because, let's be honest, our strikers, I mean, Cunha's probably the tallest at 5'9". Like, he's not a tall guy, is he? So he's not going to really win anything. So we're not going to go long. We're going to try and play it through the quarters as we go. And it got us nowhere, because they were on us like fucking flies on shit every single time it got near us. They really fucking hounded us. And it was such a fucking embarrassment at times, especially when you've seen someone like Craig Dawson making error after error. He had an absolute stinker yesterday. But because for whatever reason, he doesn't seem to think Santi Bueno's ready, or he's just not who he fancies. I don't know. We're going to be stuck with him for the rest of the season, maybe. It's frustrating. Very frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I was going to say...
Go on.
Go on, Stu.
This from Paul in the comments, it doesn't help when our fans get nervous when we do it. We have to back the team regardless of what we think. But that's fine. But people get nervous because we haven't got the players to do it. And it looks amazing when it comes off. But again, we've got Craig Dawson, who's probably never really played that way in his entire life. And now we're asking him to do it. You got Jose Sarr doing it when he can't do it. If we could play like that and it worked 100% of the time, I think everyone would be aboard. It's a bit like when Nuno came in and everyone was like, "Oh, we're Wolves. We don't play football like this. It's going to be terrible." And then within a few weeks, people realised, "Oh yeah, actually this works." And there was no nervousness and there was no moaning. And there was a few forwards and, you know, the usual crowd of galong and all the usual things. But on the whole, people bought into it. But we can't do it. We can't play this way. And we're not Brighton, and we're not going to be teams like it. We're not going to be a club that accepts stuff like this, because we're Wolves. And you got people from Wolverhampton. Other than Andy, they don't go to the good food show, they don't buy a fountain pen. we're not that kind of club. So just knock it on the head and pack it in.
See, I as with most things, am kind of in the middle of this debate, because I get the logic of trying to retain possession. And Stu, you're right. The difference between, you know, where you lose it is quite important, because, say, if you lose it on the edge of your box compared to, you know, on the halfway line, it is quite a significant impact. But you do have to get the ball to the halfway line. And if a way to get it there is lumping it long, then, you know, mass generalisation for there, Stu. Yeah, sounds about right. Yeah, we do a football podcast. It should be the tagline for most things in football, Twitter and podcasts, shouldn't it, in a way. But I think a lot of it depends. It's not, for me, about Sarr. It's not about Dawson in a way, in terms of you talk about play out back. It's a collective responsibility. It is how that team can talk about it's going through the thirds. We know players like Max Kilman can play through the thirds. We've seen him do it. We've seen him thread a ball between, you know, central midfielders or carry it through. We've seen Dawson do it this season as well. But it relies on that next phase of plays. It relies on the Mina to be able to be picking up the ball and getting in the right positions. It relies on Semedo to be doing it. It relies on Sarabia and Neto and quite literally everyone to be completely in sync with one another. And I think it wasn't that there was a case that, you know, don't make it fell at the first hurdle with Sarr and Dawson yesterday, but it didn't help that a lot of players weren't quite at it for me either.
Yeah, there's no movement or no one's showing. I mean, there was a good comment there as well. We don't seem to mess it up away from home. I mean, I can name like Brighton away last year. There we are. Was one off the top of my head. Because we don't tend to do it away from home. I'm there 95% of the time at away games. You don't see that much. And when we do it, we're not under any pressure. So there's a bit of a difference passing it around the back when you've got no pressure on you to, you know, trying to be dangerous and trying to pass it into players who've got someone literally on the back. We don't tend to do it away from home. It's just one of those things.
Do you think that a certain amount of credit should be going to Brentford, though, in terms of their tactics? Because, like, it's really easy for us to say, oh, they played everyone behind the ball. But if that's the other way round, then, you know, you'll have people, the football tacticos on Twitter, saying, oh, well, they've pressed at the exact right points and exploited them and, you know, they've been in the right position at the right time. Because of that, and, you know, don't get me wrong, Brentford haven't been a good side for a few months now, a while in certain people's books, but their form coming into this was poor, but it felt like they mapped out a real game plan and really tactic their way through it, along with all their other usual shenanigans, to actually, you know, make life hard for Wolves. And we've seen a bit of a trend now with us that, you know, we've had a great performance and we've not been able to maintain it or manage the next game. And, all right, could you say that happening twice in the space of 3 weeks is a trend? But it's a bit worrying that we've had two euphoric results in the last month and then we followed them up with a really shoddy display. And again, Dean Marsden in the comments saying, I get the logic because it tends to happen more against teams that sit in. We try and tease them out to give us space, but we don't have players that are consistently good enough to do it. And that's right, to be honest. And if you're not being able to find those gaps, that's where you need to hit those wide areas. And I think that's kind of what you're saying to you, isn't it? It's like, well, you know, have a bit of variety. Yeah. Unless you are, you know, Man City and they get it, you need to be actually you've got these other tools in your arsenal, because no matter where you are on the table, and, you know, Wolves are mid-table, so we're kind of an interesting opposition at the moment, aren't we? Because half the teams are quite literally striving to beat us. The other half want to make sure they're, you know, pushing us back down the ladder, so to speak.
I think we have struggled against teams who have sat in and tried to frustrate us, give us no space to get our running game going. It happened against Man United in that first half. They absolutely blew us away by sitting back, letting us fuck up, and then just going long, hitting us long, and just running and running and running. And that's sort of what Brentford did yesterday to a slightly less successful, but still, you know, I say less successful. It wasn't as attractive, but it was just as successful as Man United's, I think. So that's all that clubs have sort of need to do against us now. It feels like we've kind of been figured out a little bit. Whereas in the earlier part of the season, it felt like Gary O'Neill was the manager who was figuring out other teams, working out how you play through them. Now clubs have sort of done that against us, and it kind of need to vary it up a little bit. You noticed through the game yesterday, we did try like four or five different formations and tried this, that, and the other. And we did play with, you know, a right footer on the right wing and a left on the left. And then we swapped it around and nothing quite came off because our biggest tool is very much that running game, which we never got going yesterday because we were never given that space to, because their pressing was perfect. There's a reason they had like less than 30% of possession yesterday and still came away with both winning 2-0 and winning the XG game, even though they didn't have like massive of opportunities, because they played it to perfection. And we just sort of worked ourselves into a shoot a little bit with it, I think. And, you know, just kept going around the houses without ever getting to the position where we needed to. I mean, did we even have a shot with anger other than Neto's header in the first half? Like, I can't remember anything else that really happened in their penalty area throughout most of the 90 minutes, to be honest, because we could never get through. We struggled to get through the first bank of midfielders, let alone the defenders.
Yeah, I think
just didn't happen for us.
It's when the however annoying Brentford are, we did exactly the same thing to Man City and beat them doing the same thing. So yeah, we can't go out any amount about it. It's just you do what you do. But I think it's spot on there. We had no running game, and that was kind of linking it back to kind of some kind of structure. Cunha being injured, because then we did have no one at all other than Neto.
I think that's the, I guess, the big talking point is how can we weren't being able to link up play going forward. And I think losing our star player at the moment after 20 minutes is a big factor within that. I mean, to be honest, we weren't amazing that 20 minutes, but at the moment, given the fact that, you know, going into this, 15 goal involvements in 15 games. Know, this is a player who is so influential for how we play and how we score goals, that to lose him is a big loss for us. And, you know, we looked at the starting lineup and the squad beforehand. No one's coming into replacing particularly effectively.
And no, you know, one can. He's such a different player to pretty much everything else we've got, isn't he? And isn't it ironic that in the week that we've been talking about his potential of being one of the best players to have played in a Wolf shirt in the last X many years is the week he gets fucking injured within 20 minutes.
Oh, it's just so Wolves, isn't it? It's just classic Wolves.
Oh, yeah, and the fact that he's got like an undetermined injury as well that's not been named or anyone's talked about how long he's going to be out for, which normally means about 2 or 3 months.
Yeah, I was going to say, in terms of that, I guess, I think Gary Neil's come out after the game and said he felt something a little in his hamstring, but he doesn't quite, they don't think it's too serious. Now, it's such a tricky one. You can't always swing it and guess, aren't you, in terms of particularly hamstring injuries. Like, it could be, you know, a month. It could be, he's just felt a slight pulling his back in 2 weeks kind of thing, but it almost feels like however long it is too long.
Yeah, I mean,
well, it is. Sorry, Stu, carry on, mate.
No, I was going to say, you get to Spurs next week without him and Wang and we can forget it before we even kick off.
Yeah, I mean, you are left. I saw a couple of comments that saying, we shouldn't be criticising Wolves for not bringing in a forward or letting go of Kladnic. But it is that drop off and not having those different options, because, you know, you sort of hope that Quang's fit, but, you know, effectively we're talking, he's felt pulling his calf on, call it Thursday last week. You're talking a 9-10 day turnaround on that injury.
Let's be honest as well with Quang. Quang's been globetrotting for the last month. He went to wherever the tournament was held with a knock. He picked up another knock while he was there and he's come back with one. He doesn't have a great injury track record with us over the last couple of years either. So he's probably out for the rest of the season, knowing how things have gone with us. Like, it is a bit of a worrying sign.
We are just on that climb down. And I don't know, I'm not saying, you should have kept Sasa or Fabio Silva, who's bagging goals for fun in Scotland. No one's going to take the bait.
Oh, I mean, should we have kept at least one of them as an option?
Yes.
Probably. Probably not Silva, because...
No, probably not, no.
I think his time here is done, if I'm honest, and it does break my heart. I really wanted it to succeed, but I don't think it was ever going to work out. And the more minutes he played, the worse he seemed to be getting for us. But Sasha probably should still be a Wolves player, if I'm being perfectly honest. And he was never great, but at the same time, he was never dreadful either. He was just okay-ish most of the time, which is better than having nobody.
Yeah. And no one can tell me. And you know, Fraser came on in the second half as well. And yeah, Paul Harris in the YouTube comments, I could score in Scotland, even with football. And yeah, personally, I'd have rather seen Fraser go out on loan to a League One team or League Two team and play 15 times between now and the end of the season at senior level, and kept Sasha on the bench for quite literally this circumstance. And I completely understand, and as Dean sort of says in the comments, it's clear Gary O'Neill didn't fancy either of them. Definitely should have got someone in, massive balls up. On which note, Yuri Alberto scored again today. But I'm sorry, and I understand that they might not be O'Neill's cup of tea. It is somewhat his job to make them his taste. Mm. Or at least, you know, does Sasa Kladnic fit the same mold as Mateus Kuhn? No. Can he do half the things that you can do? No. But at least he's a viable option. And I think when I looked at that bench and, you know, started the discussion, and in previous games as well, I'd have thought that Sas Kladnic coming on yesterday instead of Bellegarde would have at least given Brentford something to think about a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Or going into the second half, I don't want to dig out Nathan Fraser, because he seems a phenomenal player in the making, if we get it right, in his development right.
We won't.
No, because we've done this.
And, yeah, exactly.
And it's like, you know, if we're in a situation going into Spurs next week and you say, Kuna's out for next 6 weeks, Wang's out for 2 weeks, we are going to be playing a front line of Neto, Bellegarde and Sarabia.
Yeah, I mean, where's the fear in that? Because all you do is you do what Brentford did. You block the middle, you force us wide, and we've got a front three of players who are 5.5 foot each. They're going to be nothing in the air. And that was half of the issue yesterday, is we never had an option other than trying to work it wide and then score a wonder goal by working your way in through 5 or 6 defenders. There was no other option other than just that, keep trying to run. And you do need to have like a separate option there. Something like Kolasinac would have given us at least a cross into the box. He's got more of a chance of getting his head on it than Sarabia has, for example, hasn't he?
Yeah. I mean, like he said, though, that neither of them are ever going to play. So what is the point? He would rather play no one there than either of them. And he said that the amount of wages that we've saved off the wage bill for the next 6 months, the fact that they couldn't be asked, or yet again, not going down the usual routes, the excuses that they've given for not bringing one in again for probably the fifth year in a row, taking away last year because they had to, which the 1 year where January wasn't a problem to sort things out, shock. The fact that we had, what, 100 grand spare on wages alone a week, and they couldn't find anyone to come in for that for 6 months. Bollocks. Absolute bollocks. And when the things are released at the end of March, and we'll all see then how close to the line we really were, because I don't think it's anywhere near. It's not tinkering on the brink like we've been led to believe. I don't think it's anywhere near that. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but I've just got a feeling that yet again we've been talked a good game and they've bollocked it up again for the God knows how many times this has happened. There you are. good point for Dean again. Johnny's wages as well. It's over 100 grand a week in savings, and that's been generous. And we couldn't get someone in. We couldn't even get William Jose back. That would have been better than no one. You know what I mean? It's what we're going to end up with. I can see it now. We're playing Sheffield United at home. We've got no one else, and Doherty will be up front. Just watch.
Oh, God. When he came on yesterday and trotted over to left fucking forward, like, I just wanted to walk out. As soon he was walking up that way, and I was just about to walk out of the ground, I was like, can't be dealing with fucking Doherty playing left fucking forward for
Wolverhampton Wanderers. He'll be playing false nine, telling you now.
He probably will be. I genuinely believe that you're probably right there.
And people didn't want the Welsh Miroslav Klose, did they?
No. I mean, he still wouldn't have played anyway, would he? Let's be honest.
No, because he's not a Gary O'Neill type of player, which, frankly, I think of someone who's got about 50 career managerial appearances, no. You know what I'm trying to say? He's not managed an awful lot of games to have a defined what is a Gary O'Neill type of player, is what I'm saying. There we go. But it is not great. And I appreciate you take out two out of your three centre forwards in any team, and it's a dent. The fact that there isn't anything quite there to, not even replace them, but it feels like we've lost two centre forwards, and that is effectively what Hang and Kuna are. And the backups are effectively what? Sarabia, who's an attacking midfielder, want the better term.
Mm-hmm.
And Bellegarde, who's an attacking wide midfielder. So, like, neither of them actually fit that next man up perspective, particularly when your other forward is a very much a wide player. Like, in a way, it would have been better for, it's going to sound really bad, I'd have rather Neto got injured, because a Bellegarde's more of a natural replacement for Neto than anyone else, because Kuna can actually play in a centre forwards position. No one else apart from Wang can do so. We have lost those two options, and I appreciate it. So I get it's difficult, but I still can't quite get my head around, you know, oh well, actually I don't fancy them, we don't want to be playing them. Yeah, it's like, if the line was, you know what, it saves us money, we're getting someone in on the cheap who can play it, great. Or you go all in on Nathan Fraser, which I don't think they're quite ready to do, nor necessarily should they do. So I don't know, whether you blame the manager, whether you blame, you know, the back office, as Graham said in the comments, Stu spot on, we've screwed up, pathetic attempt to get a striker in, Gary O'Neill must feel let down. And yeah, I see it. I do see it. But let's drag it back to the game. So,
I say it's not just about having a striker for striker's sake. It means if we had an actual striker, we wouldn't be having to shoehorn players who are not strikers into a striking role. So you could we had options off the bench then to bring Bellegarde on and bring someone else on and play them in the wide. You could play them off the front man. You don't. It's not just the fact that we need a big man up top. It's the fact that we're losing out on players playing in their natural positions, as well as not having a striker in the middle in the first place.
Does that bring us on nicely to Bellegarde chat then? Because I feel like that needs to be spoken about.
I was going to say, in my running order notes, it was frontline / JRB. So let's talk about JRB.
Let's talk about him. He's a quandary, isn't he? Like, I mean, he's clearly got some talent, but what that talent is, I'm not quite sure where it fits in our team, because he's clearly not a false nine, because he doesn't have the presence to do that. So I suppose you have to put him out wide, but his delivery into the box, although we haven't seen a lot of it, has left something to be desired as well. So do you play him deeper? I don't think he's got the physicality to be in a midfield two. So in the current setup, it wouldn't work unless we go with a three and play him ahead of them. He just doesn't feel like he fits into this team. And I don't feel like, you know, he's going to work for us, at least for this season. So Yeah, a quandary certainly is. I think I said after he scored against Sheffield United on the podcast, he's a maverick. And I still very much feel like that because he's going to have moments of brilliance. He's going to give us like a 10 out of 10 one week, but then he's going to throw in a couple of 2 out of 10s for the next month or so until we really nail down what Bellegarde is in this Wolves team. And I haven't seen anything to suggest, to really give us a good clue on what he's going to bring to this team long term.
You can clip that out and put it side by side by talking about Sarabia from April last year.
And I hope I'm wrong, don't get me. I really on like Sarabia. I really want him to, but I just don't. Like, I can see with Sarabia that he sits back, he looks, he scans, and then he does what he needs to do. I haven't seen anything of Bellegarde to suggest what he's going to become for us. And I don't mean that as a knock on him. I just don't know if he's our kind of player in this setup.
That's what I was getting at. I'm not a dig at Sarabia because Dan can do that all he wants, but I'm not going to attack the guy. But I think that's what we are. I think we're a year away from seeing what he is. It's like he needs a bedding in period. And the fact that he was great when he first came, then he got injured, then he got himself suspended. And it's like, well, all that rhythm and there's been no blues afterwards. It's just died. And it's, okay, well, he's going to be here and there. He's going to be fitting in where he doesn't really fit in on as a striker. He's not a striker, like you said. He's not really a winger yet. He's like, he's more like a kind of an old inside forward in a way. As a 10, but we don't play with a 10. He's almost like something like that. But it's like, he screams pre-season to me. Like, that's what he needs. He needs a pre-season here to bulk up. And he's probably played more than I think they thought he would. Whereas we've got the Paraguayan maverick Enzo, who no one talks about anymore, because he's been left alone to not be ruined. It feels, I know Bellegarde's a lot older, obviously, and he's played a lot of football, but it's almost like he should have been blooded in the same way into English football, and it just never worked for him yet. I think we'll see more after that. But like Dean said, we don't play with a midfield three, do we? And I think that's the problem.
Yeah. I think time will tell. There's clearly a player with a lot of potential there. And it's just whether we can tap it out of him. Again, it doesn't help if he isn't playing his natural position and the stop-startiness and coming on after 20 minutes, is always a slightly difficult task to kind of get into a rhythm of a game at that point. But it's felt like he's kind of been very quiet in a lot of games that he's played. And he seems to have that ability. He has an ability that almost you feel like he could really impose himself on the game. Allah to, I guess, on like Adama Traore, and not necessarily, oh, he's got the pace to kind of run, 60 yards at the pitch. But he's clearly got that like bit of technical ability that if he just had a bit more aggression or a bit extra something to, beat that extra man or find that killer pass. And he just feels like he's not quite there yet. And it's not to say you can't get there, but it does feel like a pre-season in him with these players would do him a world of good. Partly it might be formation and he might be, he might be victim of that. To be honest, it happens quite a lot, doesn't it? Where, he needs to play, on the side of a three behind a forward, or he needs to be on, a midfield three and have two players, have Lamina and Dull doing all the hard work for him so he can bustle up and down the pitch. But if the manager ain't doing that, it is going to be a tricky one. And yesterday, again, it's just frustrating, isn't it? Where it's, again, that it was almost just that experience, wasn't it? Because someone like Kuna.
Yeah.
There we go.
I mean,
the classic Rich drop off. it's a real shame, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I mean, he's you see, like you said, it. You see glimpses of it every now and again. You see where the ball's down and he's battering away, and he somehow manages to get through three or four players, and he comes away with the ball. And you think, okay, right, he's going to kick on, and you really do want him to. But I don't know. Time will tell with him, and I think you're both right. Pre-season, and we'll have to judge him next season. It doesn't help us in the short term, but it's football for you, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah. It's football, isn't it? Wolves. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's Wolves, isn't it? I guess let's talk about the goals, and because well, there's technically three goals I want to talk about, and they kind of all centered around Craig Dawson. So the corner first. It reminded me, and I cannot remember who it might have been. Hoops, when he was part of the Fancast Parish, mentioned when, you know, he came to corners and being a big proponent of man marking as opposed to zonal, because, you know, it's players who score goals, not space. This was a very clear example of man marking not going well yesterday.
Yeah, it was a bit, wasn't it? I mean, Dawson couldn't have been closer to. Who scored?
Norgaard,
that's it. I was going to say Pinnock for some reason. I've seen the clip of him, and he seems to duck underneath it, which does make me wonder, did he get a call from Saar? That's the only thing I can see, because that's not Craig Dawson to duck out of a header. That's his bread and butter. He loves that shit. So I can only assume he got a shout from Saar, and Saar was in no man's land. Saar was back stick, and the ball was front stick, so... Yeah, comedy of errors, I think, is the cliche on that one.
Yeah, you could hear it. You could hear Saul Caulfrey. And it's the way he looks at him afterwards as well.
Wicked.
Where Rich has gone robot. You can see how Dawson looks at him, and normally he's throwing his arms around and everything, but it was Saar's fuck up that was. I don't know why on earth he's trying to save it on his side. Like about like four foot off the ground from an in-swinging corner. God knows what he's doing there. But there's been a few weird ones like this. I mean, like, look at Trafford for Burnley again yesterday. Just he come in from absolutely no man's land for a corner again. And to go from not conceding all season to now three in three games, it's a bit ridiculous, really. And there's no way any keeper should be doing that where he did yet. And I thought he got away lightly yesterday that's his fault. I mean, Dawson shouldn't be ducking anyway. Why, as a defender of his experience, especially, you'd be ducking on the edge of your own 6 yard box. That's weird. But for Saar to be doing to almost lying down rather than just coming and punching it, baffling.
Sort of gone under a radar, doesn't it?
Oh dear. I think Rich is having issues with his internet.
Oh yes, Saar's involvement.
He said earlier, everything's fine.
We literally joke about it. Every four show.
He said earlier, it's charged, it's plugged in, nothing, there's been no problems until everyone logs in, it's all okay. And they're looking. He's going to go wandering.
Happens every time.
This is what happens when you live in a palatial mansion in Shifnal, because
I've realised what's happened now, and it has been fixed. It was someone kicking the plug socket.
The slave.
I say.
He's given the night off to watch the Super Bowl. That's what's happening.
I'm sorry, I've got a massive mirror behind me, guys. I'm sorry. You know what? That was penny stock from B&M. That was. Yeah. Just always good to save money where you can.
I thought it was a silver plate.
It does look it from here, doesn't it?
Yes. It's a shine to help it, doesn't it?
I thought that's what they bring his dinner on every day, and then they hang it up when they're finished.
Richard's big plate. I tell you what, this is great content for the audio listeners.
Yeah. It is, isn't it?
Anyway,
Richard's got a silver platter on his wall that's been put there by his mounted slaves that he employs during the week.
Dawson's offside goal. yes, offside.
Well, it is.
Yes,
I assume so.
It's literally a foot offside.
Yeah, like,
I haven't seen it back, to be honest. So, but I assume it is if it was given. Yeah,
it's not even close. It's okay. His entire foot is offside.
Oh no, it is clearly like off. It's like he has just, the line is there, and he's just kind of quite literally put a foot over the line, and he doesn't gain an advantage. He doesn't any of that stuff. But I think it's just that old thing with offside, isn't it? It's like you draw the line somewhere, and actually it is quite clear. Yeah. You know, Dawson's foot is like the next bit along from the Brentford's player. But
yeah, I will say I saw a few people talking about this and how it's making them lose interest in football and all this stuff, and it's like you can't celebrate anything anymore. Everyone celebrated that goal because there's no one in that ground thought it was offside. Other than when it was checked afterwards and the fact that it was. Because it did not look offside at all. And everyone celebrated it. There was no looking out to the lines when there was no second guessing. And it was one of the first ones where, oh, that was actually a bit of a shock that one was called. And then you saw it when they put it on the screen. He's like, yeah, okay. Fair enough. You could just can't argue with it. Just get on with it. It's offside.
It was frustrating how long it took again, though. I mean, not to get into VAR chat and all that, but that was annoying. And it just come up checking for offside. I'm like, okay, who are you checking? Like, it's little things like that. They still need to iron out to make it a less shit experience. Just tell us what you're actually checking, not something vague. Just say, yeah, checking Dawson for offside. Fine, okay, we know what we're looking at there. It's silly shit like that that makes being in the ground a much worse experience for me, I think, with VAR.
Yeah. We've kind of talked about playing out from the back. We've briefly talked about Dawson. And I guess it all gets wrapped up neatly with the second goal where it all just goes a bit tits up, doesn't it?
Where do you start?
Yeah.
It's just the easiest way of putting it. Yeah, it's just a bit shit, weren't it? But it all was. It's
all of the above. It starts by passing out into pressure completely unnecessarily, then get away with it, and then you're passing into the centre of the pitch again, literally seconds after you've already got away with it once. And yeah, it's ridiculously bad pass. But you, like I said at the start, you leave yourself open to what you expect. Just stupidity, and then that was game over then, done. It was bad enough trying to get back in it once, but nah.
We worked hard. Yeah, go on, Andy.
I was just going to say, like, you could feel the fucking air just being sucked out of the Molyneux when that second goal went in.
Yeah.
I think even though it didn't look like we were going to score, there was that element of us trying at least up until then. And, you know, we were running and, you know, he kept coming back at us, but we were making an effort at least, which I don't felt we did for the first 60-odd minutes of the game. But as soon as that second one hit the back of the net, it was just like, well, that's it then. We're not going to get back into this. It's not going to be Man United. You know, we fucked it. It's done. So, yeah, probably the most deflated, I think, the Molyneux's been this season, other than that last-minute winner against Man United. It was just, you just knew it was inevitable at that point.
I think it doesn't help that even against Man United, and I think I tweeted it and ironically deleted it because we started to lose and it looked like a really bad take, was under O'Neill, we have always looked like scoring. You know, we might not win a game, but actually, and I think the record shows first game in 18 league games that we've not conceded since we played Bournemouth last season at home, I think was the stat. Like, we look like we're a threat, and Kuna goes off, Wang's out injured, and it just, as soon as that second was, it's like, we aren't going to mount a rising comeback here. We're not going to get one in the 85th minute and it get a bit of a grandstand finish or anything like that. Do we need to talk about Dawson in this team long term, though?
You want to talk
about Dawson? Yes, please. I do too. I like Craig Dawson, but we have hit the limit. And I said early season, there's only so much time he's going to be in this team we do need to transition to the next one off the cab rank, which should be Santi Bueno. But I also think that Santi Bueno should have played more minutes than he has done at this point. Because whilst Dawson's been fine, I do think that you need to start, you know, planning for the future. Dawson's, what, 35 now? Nearly 36, I believe. I mean,
he's not that old.
I think he's 34 going on 30. Okay. He's 33, 34 in May.
Oh, we see. Oh, I thought he's a couple of years older. But either way, like, he's never been the quickest of players. Post 30, you're always going to start to slow down. I know from personal experience. So you do have to start looking to the future. We're not going to get relegated. And, you know, I don't think that's a controversial thing to say at this point of the season. So we might as well start looking at Bueno. If he ends up not being the player, we've then got the summer to replace him. But at least we're going to be working with a known quantity at that point, at this time and place. We still don't quite know what Santi Bueno is. So we may as well have a look at him, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I would give him a run. We've got a reason. Let's say a reason. Well, an excuse if one was needed for Dawson to have a rest. Although, you look at the Man United performance and you look at in the first half especially, and then you look at the yesterday and you think, well, that's the performance of a guy who's played too much football at his age. But then on the other side of it, he did nothing wrong at Chelsea. He was great, like everyone else was. So it's unfortunate that it happens at home when the vast majority of supporters are there to see him just completely collapse. But there's more than enough reason to give him a rest after that, because especially at Spurs, where they're not going to stop and they are going to be at you and they're going to be physical, despite the lithe nature of some of their players. I think Santi, like you said, I think Santi deserves his time, and he's not kicked up a fuss. He's not moaned, which, considering where he came from and how they're doing this season, he'd have every right to. I think he's not let anyone down either, so the kind of slow phasing in of him as a natural successor were perfect, you know. And I think when you look at that game coming up soon against Sheffield United at home, that's got them sneaking a 1-0 win all day long.
Mm.
And we need him to be more bedded into English football before that happens, personally. But yeah, if Dawson starts again against Spurs, I wouldn't be against it. But it's starting to become apparent that he is slowing down.
Yeah, and I think that's it for me. And I feel awful for it. It's for... He's not quite past it, but you always want to kind of get ahead of it before he's past it. Then you feel bad because, well, hang on, I'm replacing someone who's not actually kind of over the hill or anything like that. And it is clear he does bring various tangibles regularly enough in terms of his ability, but those intangibles in terms of being that calm, reassuring player. And it's where the Wolves are ready to bite the bullet and go, actually, we play a back three now, which helps. Max Kilman's had 6 months as captain. Toti Gomez has stepped up and looks more and more of a leader as well.
Mm-hmm.
If Craig Dawson's not bringing the quality football-wise, and we don't necessarily need that experience, you know, what then does he bring? Apart from a solid centre-half who, you know, can head and tackle all day.
Mm. And don't get me wrong, we're not saying throw him on the scrap heap, he's done here. We're not saying that. He can still come on if we're winning, you know. Say we go 1-0 up against Spurs, you want someone with a bit of experience who's going to hold it down and kick and head everything that comes in your way. He's the kind of player you want to be bringing on, not the other way around and bringing someone on to replace him, for example. So, yeah, he's still got a role in this team. I just don't think he should be guaranteed first starter week in, week out.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair way of putting it. It wouldn't be a game against Brentford if there wasn't a level of shithousery. I think the one which kind of came, and it's come up quite nicely because of what we'll talk about, the blue card. But the Brentford goalie basically putting a second ball live in play, stop balls taking a quick throw in. Would we have scored from that throw in? Probably not, because I think we'd have five fluffed it anyway. It's part of me loves it. I love that level of gamesmanship. I think I sort of said in the preview show, players would exploit the rules of the game as far as they possibly can do without being classed as cheating. And that is effectively one of them. But this is almost that prime example of that is more than a yellow card offence. He has really stopped this big opportunity happening through gamesmanship. I'm just interested in your two guys' takes on the situation.
I mean, under the current rules, what he did was exactly what I would want Jose Sarr to do if he was in that position. Take the yellow card and just stop the attack. But you are right. It should be more than a yellow card. Like, one of the things I hate most in football is the cynical foul to just stop an attack. You're making no attempt to win the ball. All you want to do is bring the player down so you can get all your players behind the ball and reset. That, to me, all you're doing is endangering an opposition there by kicking them. And I feel that that really should be more than a yellow card. If that started being given as reds, I wouldn't be arsed about it. I'd agree with it. But I do understand we do need to evolve somewhat. I'm not 100% sure if I like the idea of a sin bin, though. I don't know if that's the answer, but it does feel like there's got to be a somewhere in the middle between a red and red and a yellow, doesn't it? I just don't know what it is. I don't know if that's the answer. But then I suppose that's why the trial of these things is, isn't it, to see how it works.
Yeah. I mean, apparently it's worked pretty well in non-league where it's been trialed there. And I saw one today where a keeper did get sent to the sin bin and an outfield player had to go in goal for the 10 minutes because obviously they couldn't make a sub because then he'd be in the sin bin and that kind of thing. So from that point of view, if that keeper was in the sin bin and one of the outfield player in goal for 10 minutes, then they're completely screwed and that wouldn't happen again, would it? So I know it's very rare that it happens anyway, but you'd have to do something like if you got it in the last 10 minutes, then it's a red card anyway, because you're automatically losing 10 minutes. Yeah, exactly. So there'd have to be something like that, and it'd have to be thought through a lot more than it already has been, because it's yet another thing open to interpretation for them to fuck up, which is a big problem with it all.
That's one issue I'm having with it, is part of me feels like it's just an excuse to protect referees.
Yeah.
Like this whole thing, let's add 10, 15 minutes on to the end of the game. No. If a player is wasting time, you book them, you tell them to do it there and then, or you reverse the decision. If a goal kick is taking too long, fuck yeah, that's a corner then, because you're taking too long. It's like refs don't want to make the tough decisions, so they'll just do something a bit mealy-mouthed. And like Brentford is a perfect example of time wasting. You saw it time and again yesterday. They love that shit. They take it right up to the edge where it is taking the piss, and they got away with it time and again because Hooper was too weak with them.
Yeah.
And it's just about refs knowing what the law is and saying, OK, well, there's the line, you've crossed it, that's a booking. If that keeper then wasted time like he did, well, that's the second booking because you're being a fucking idiot and these are the rules. But it's just a way out of getting them out of danger without going that step too far and taking it down to 10 men and then having Sky Sports News saying, oh, we don't like to see players sent off, it ruins the game. But they've done a sending off offence, so fuck them. That's part of my issue with it.
I mean, when it comes to the clock count one, for me, instead of adding on 10 minutes or whatever, just every time, you know, pause the clock. Don't have the whole added time. Do it basically how they effectively do it in rugby. For me,
I mean, we're all American sports fans here, and in American sports, they don't have the referee keeping the time. They have a third person in all of them, in your ice hockey, in your NBA, in NFL. They all have a third party keeping track of the time. It's not on the referee, and it should be. Stop it. You can have that clock in the ground so everyone can see. And if they did make it two 30-minute halves of football, because that's roughly what we get, isn't it, with a 90-minute game, is we get roughly about 60 minutes. If they did that and just press stop and you saw it on the big screen, so you knew where you were at all points in the game. And then once it hits, you know, 60 minutes or the end of the half, the next time the ball goes dead, that's the end of the game. trial that. I'd be more interested in that, to be honest, to stamp out time wasting and the likes, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, just ball in play.
So there's no arguing to have, oh, you're time wasting, and are you just pulling your socks up or you're tying your laces? Doesn't matter. If the ball's dead, the time's not kicking on. So it just solves everything straight away. But they won't do it because it's too sensible.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, it does leave us in the same position we started the weekend. We're still 10th. We are that little bit further away from Brighton, who lost on Saturday as well. But we're still solidly mid-table. But it's tricky. It's tricky. But I don't know. I think we're still kind of all optimistic. I think a lot in the next kind of few days is going to be very much dictated by Kuna's injury news and Huang's injury news. Because I think if we're struggling with them over the next couple of weeks, I think the talk of Europe will quickly dissipate. And it'll be very much back to how quickly can we get to, you know, 40, 45 points. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, no worries about it or anything like that. But
I mean, sorry to interrupt you, Rich. On that point, Europe was always fanciful. I think the fact that we were even talking about Europe is a victory for this season, to be perfectly honest. We were expecting a relegation fight from day one till the end of the season. So the fact that we even thought about Europe is just fantastic. That's the win. That's the real quiz, as Finchie would say.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with being in the mid-table, is it? Particularly from where we started to where we are now. I think, I can't remember which show I said it on recently, for me, I'd almost rather us not get to Europe because we've effectively got there too early. And I know Gary Neil might not be 100% as a manager, but I'd much rather see him have a pre-season with us finishing 10th than him have a very short pre-season finishing 7th.
Hmm.
And effectively go for a very short pre-season, very short recruitment process for new players and everything like that. I'd feel a lot more confident as having another season to kind of, you know, effectively give Kuna that big stage because he's nearly there. But to have it again at this level without the focus of European football, and almost that's the carrot on the stick for him in 2025. That you hope it,
yeah.
In theory, I say there's a good chance we're going to lose Pedro Neto in the summer because we're going to need to sell someone so we can spend money. His market's high, fill your boots. Then it'll be let's keep someone like Kuna, let's try and get into Europe so we can keep him. If not, we sell him for 60 million.
I completely agree, to be honest, Rich. Yeah, 100%.
It's just rinse and repeat and being sensible, and that's that's not what they've done for a long, long time, is it? So,
head and shoulders.
But you, it's been a long time since I've used head and shoulders, Rich. I'll tell you now. If anything, head and shoulders could be the reason why I lost my hair. I should have switched to Tresemme earlier than I did. talking about silliness, before I forget to say, I said I was going to give one of the boys on the back row of the Steve Ball, we thought he could have died because he is a bit older than us. He's probably in his 70s, to be fair. But he was back yesterday and he'd had a replacement. So he won't right on his around crowds walking again properly, but he's back on the bike. He's back working out again. He was walking fine. And he was there yesterday. So yes, welcome back. That was the best part of the day.
I say, before we wrap up then, because we've hit the hour mark, and massively great for everyone who's listened, has put up with our absolute irrelevance throughout most of it, and my sheer commitment not to get in a Hamilton quote, which was the pre-recording meeting agenda. Quickly, what's our Super Bowl prediction, guys?
It's going to be the Chiefs, I think. I wouldn't mind if the 49ers, if they did steal it, but I think the Chiefs are just too strong, to be honest.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that and the the unmentionable and all that nonsense that goes with it. Is it fixed? We can't possibly say. I know that Ash don't want to put it in the comments, but we're not going to put that on the screen and get libeled, are we? So let's not say anything about that. But yeah, I hope for the sake of Nate, no, he's one of us anyway, and he is a 49ers fan, and he was out on his stoop enjoying a beer earlier on. He's in the mood already. And why wouldn't you be? If by some miracle the Jets ever got there, I ain't coming on here. I'll be fucking drinking as soon as I woke up that day. So, yeah. Ferret baked beans for someone in the comments there, Mike Evans. For me, the Aldi ones now. I was with what Pricey said about the Asda ones. The Asda ones were really excellent for a long time, but something happened, something changed. So the Aldi ones now, followed by Branston.
I'm an Aldi baked beans man.
Mm-hmm. 3 for 3.
Yeah, it's a solid choice. In terms of the American football, though, I feel like the Chiefs could drag it out of them. They've got a muscle memory and have them. They've been crap in the season, predominantly, but have just had sheer muscle memory to go through the playoffs. And when you compare it to, I guess, you know, how 49ers did against Detroit Lions, that was a high-scoring, close game. It just feels like they've got that a knack of winning. So we'll see. But if you're like Stu, who doesn't sleep and will be watching Gusher, or like me, he'll be woken up for 2 hours tonight and we'll be watching Gusher, we'll be here next time to talk about it. But anyway, until next time, it's goodbye from Andy.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Stu.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye for me. Just you wait.